So you said that you would like to leave the castle. You're walking through the castle gates, past the portcullis, and you're about to go down...
perception chest real quick. Oh, yep. 20. Hey.
You rolled a... Okay, you rolled a 20. Okay, well, you, in the distance, past the mist, you see a black dragon walking up towards the castle.
All right, okay, all right, all right. I'm going to sneak past that black dragon.
Give me a stealth check.
I rolled off the book. It was 5 anyway.
No, I understand, understand.
Okay, here we go. Big money. Oh, hey, look at that. 18.
But it...
18, right? That's what I need. They're past perceptions. Really
Right? So you sneak out into the night, and you don't think the dragon sees you.
All right.
Mm-hmm. What do you plan on doing now?
Well, I got that new spell from last time, right? That dragon-killing spell.
And I got rid of the house rule on not sneaking attack.
And we're still doing the sneak attack with non-damage spells, you know, like, okay, all right. All right, here
trying to open up.
Yep. Uh-huh, all right.
Request.
Boom! Nat 20.
But it's...
What?
There's a problem here, Jim. I mean...
Problem?
Let's talk about problem players.
The only problem here is that you won't let me play the game the way I want to play.
Let's talk about problem players on WebDM.
This episode is sponsored by Guile and Design, makers of spellbooks for all of your 5e and TTRPG reference cards. Using cards is one of the best ways to keep track of your spells, items, or martial abilities. And these are an easy and cool-looking way to keep up to 60 per book together. Plus, each book comes with built-in bookmarks to keep everything organized. Comes in black dragon with silver or gold accents and red dragon styles, with more new designs on the way. Best of all, you can get them on Amazon. They ship in 1 to 2 days, and they're the perfect gift for your gamer friend who has everything. Check them out. Link in the comment and the description.
All right, Jim.
Yo.
Let's talk about problem players. Well, no. I'm going to stop right there. Is it wise to call it problem players, or are these just problem behaviors that players participate in?
Oh, certainly, right? Problem players is, I feel like it's a pernicious sort of way of thinking about it. It kind of like casts, someone at your table who has a disruptive play style or just is a mismatch as like the problem with them as a person.
Yeah, I mean, you're labeling them as such, therefore it becomes an us versus them. You're drawing battle lines there when it's just kind of like, hey, you know that thing that you do at certain points? Like, we want to talk about it.
Yeah, right? And I get it. You know, it can feel that way. It can certainly feel like it's battle lines, and it can certainly feel very personal. And that's sort of the trick with RPGs, is that they are very personal experience. And for even like your beer and pretzels, kick down the door, kind of D&D style games, like, you can get attached to your characters, you can get attached to certain, you know, how certain rules play out, or house rules or something, like, you might not even realize what's going to trip you up.
Yeah.
So, like, you can get in these situations where, like, someone else at the table is doing something that's, like, really throwing you off your game, grating on you, bothering you, stepping over boundaries or something. We are not talking about, like, abusive behaviors here. We're not mental health professionals. We're talking about an order of magnitude lower than things like, you know, emotional or physical abuse. This would just be disruptive behaviors, things that some players do or like habits that some players pick up that get talked about as sort of problems that need to be addressed and things like that. Where I'm not sure that it's needs to be that hard line, but there's a lot going on. This is a big, messy, complex problem, right?
And it's often life, not talked about, right?
Yeah.
It's life. I mean, we all have to interact, and everybody wants to come to the table with their own like idea, but trying to make that meld and mesh together. Sometimes there can be some friction.
Certainly,
So who is the onus on to correct these? Like, is it just the DM, or is the entire table need to be involved? And also, like, where can a DM, like, find the information on how to do this? Other than, obviously, watching our video now. But before now, like, we're having to make a video for a reason.
Sure, So player styles have a bit more, resources out there for DMs and other players than, say, you know, DMing styles. And this video, I guess, is kind of a companion piece to one we did earlier about, problem DMs, issues between player and DM. That one's, a lot of the things we say there apply to this as well. But for most of, like, RPGs, kind of just the history of them, there hasn't really been a big concerted effort to like create better game facilitators,
yeah,
and to like create certain type of player, certain type of player behaviors that are conducive to the game, right? So an example of this would be like in some older versions of Dungeons and Dragons, it's just such a different play style that if you came with some of the more modern, you know, like attachment to the character, this is about my character and their relationships with the party and the world and NPCs. It's very character-centric and driven, yep, very satisfying to play, but very different in terms of mindset and attitude and behavior than an old-school dungeon crawl where you can have a significant amount of investment, but it might be easier if you didn't until you have some characters that survive for a while.
Kind of the old style of child rearing where, you know, you don't name them until they're five. Maybe don't name your first edition character till they're fifth level.
Oh, sure, or name level, right? That could be a very fun way of playing. I think it like it highlights that using the examples of sort of like this is how people used to play, this was the culture of play back then. It changed a lot, right? Like what we know about the culture of play in, say, the early years of role-playing hobby is different from, like, even just a few years later when it became more and more popular and more people outside of a hardcore group of wargamers are playing this. I've struggled to sort of, like, see it. Where has there ever been an effort to say, like, okay, let's try to deliberately, either through some sort of rule book or something, make for better game masters and make for players who play better? And I think part of the problem is there's so many different goals and reasons why you would play, it'd be difficult to like codify all of that.
Yeah.
I mean, you know,
you're talking about the diversity of all mankind. And
sure.
The possibilities of all of it.
Sure. And it really highlights the, you know, the fact that the difficulty here is that this is so much for so long was decentralized and you learned how to DM through watching someone else at your table do it. Maybe an older sibling, maybe you played with a friend's group and they had someone that DM'd. You know, you take turns, or you took turns, and like some people gravitated towards it and others didn't. And
yeah,
even though there's sort of like attempts to give you procedures and here's how you create worlds and here's how you run dungeons, a lot of the advice for like dealing with intrapersonal conflict, which is a social game, it's going to happen, it's just bad. Yeah. Either the advice was bad or it was unacknowledged. Sometimes you get admissions that like, hey, you need to like take a player aside and talk to them, but more often than not, you get things like punishing them with in-game consequences. Mm-hmm. And like, I'm trying to imagine a play culture where that is the, you know, part of the, you know, social opprobrium, you know, being a disruptive player of like, yeah, if you're doing these things that are upsetting everybody, well, you know, you can still play with us. It's just your character's going to suffer consequences. And I can see for a certain type of player, that might be enough motivation to like, not do those things, mm-hmm, but there's something about it where you're not really getting to the heart of the matter.
No, you know? Punishing players' characters,
yeah,
for their misbehavior,
yeah,
to me is not really the way to go.
Yeah,
because in certain contexts, maybe that behavior isn't like that bad.
Sure,
because maybe you have a DM who doesn't like the rules lawyer guy.
Sure,
who decided to play the lore bard.
Right,
who was a lawyer basically. Right, I mean they just went full tilt boogie. Yeah, it's something I would do in my early days if fifth edition came out back when I first started.
Sure, yeah,
because I mean that's who I was at the table.
Yeah,
which, you know, rules lawyer is okay because you know all the rules, but when you start squeezing every little bit and you're that person that's like, but the rules say.
But the rules, but say, the rules we start, say. We start interrupting the game. We start stepping on others' toes. Yeah. And, like, I'm thinking of things like that. I'm thinking of things like the classic thief versus paladin arguments that you would get where, okay, my thief is pickpocketing and stealing and things like that. Well, my paladin has in-game, like, if I let you get away with this, I lose. I'm just a crappy fighter. You know, and you're setting, that's a situation, right? And so you either do the lawful stupid where you kind of, I'm going to turn my eyes and I don't know what's going on. It just lacks weight and you keep that up, it's going to be a joke, you know. But at the same time, like, where is the burden on the thief player to be like, yeah, I'm not going to deliberately do things that are going to, you know, jeopardize the play experience of my fellow player, even if my character would do that, mm-hmm, even if this, you know, self-serving, selfish thief would potentially crap where they eat, you know, from stealing from the party. And like, I can see why when I read about sort of the play culture that came out of this, where you know, you're getting a bunch of people together, and they're taking on the role of individual soldiers in these, you know, these mercenary companies. And it's like, we'll use a map of the Netherlands and, you know, put a castle here, and we'll give it some silly names. And in the, those early days, it's it, there's a lot of PvP. You're, you know, they're war gamers, right? Mm-hmm. They're constantly fighting against each other. That's where the DM comes from, the neutral arbiter, the referee between these two players. Right. And so that play culture and style might have just had a greater tolerance and expectation of PvP behaviors, and an expectation that, yeah, you are out in this for yourself, and if you can pull one over on another player, then, you know, great. A modern example of this is a game, Torchbearer. Torchbearer is designed to sort of simulate an old-school dungeon crawl experience, but it has, like, rule support for your character being made miserable and hungry and just, like, wretched. And the whole point is that you're these people on the fringes of society that have to go in these dangerous hell holes for some reason. Mine was paying off a debt to a mob boss. And I had a goal for myself, acquire a certain magic item, a certain X amount of loot, you know, mm-hmm. to pay off my debt. I'd acquired a magic item that got me 3/5 of the way there. And another player goes, I want that item. And there are rules to facilitate a confrontation between two PCs. And as it was happening, I was kind of like, this is not something that would happen in D&D. Like, in D&D, this might be a confrontation between both the players. There's not really a lot of rules for, like, how you adjudicate one character convincing another character to give them something. Like, that's usually sort of handled from a metagame, like, I'll trade you these things or whatever.
Right, right.
And in Torchbearer here, I was sitting there playing, like, I don't want this. I want to keep that magic item. Like, that's really awesome. But at the same time, I'm like, this is an outcome that would never happen. And in that sense, I like it better than the fact that I didn't get to keep my magic item. You know, yeah. There was a whole other, you know, backstabbing later on. And, you know, mm-hmm. like, I paid off enough of my debt that my character wasn't murdered at the end.
It's amazing to me because we used to have some altercations.
Yes. Yeah.
Some of them were like, you know, it was the normal.
Yeah.
The thief and the whatever.
Yeah.
But sometimes it was, I mean, I know it wasn't a game that I was in, but I remember the story of the TPK because somebody shot a dwarf in the back. Just because they were pissed off at him.
Yeah.
And then everybody just started fighting.
Everybody just started
fighting.
The whole
party
yeah.
just wiped itself.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, you know, guys,
wrestlers yeah.
fight each other all the time, and they're actually hitting each other.
Sure.
But you know what? They stick to the script. They sure. stick to the narrative yeah. structure.
Yeah, yeah.
And, they can actually just do it and have fun. And I'm just like, I just don't understand. Like, I love PvP.
Yeah, yeah. It's very satisfying.
Like,
when
like,
yeah.
like, straight up fighting. Like, I was on a game on Grimjack's channel.
Yeah.
Where we did Highlander.
Uh-huh.
And that's
uh-huh.
literally just PvP.
Yeah.
And we all had an amazing time. And yeah. like being able to like monologue and role play and go through that. And it's just like, I can just imagine like, I would, every match or whatever, I would just think back to that TPK wipe thing.
Yeah.
And I'm just like.
But, and that's, see, that's most people's experiences, I imagine, is mm-hmm. that their experiences with PvP moments come when their emotions are charged.
Yeah.
There's a misinterpretation. People's goals for play are not explicitly, if they even know them, they're not explicitly stated. Mm-hmm. So everybody's talking past each other. One DM's arguing about this rule interpretation, whereas the player is arguing from a place of, like, fiction. Like, the fictional outcome of this thing is not satisfying, but maybe nobody can articulate that. And if you throw in the mix that they're potentially immature players, you know, they're, you know, young, don't have a lot of experience, you have a recipe for just a lot of wounded feelings, mm-hmm. you know, broken friendships, bad experiences, and then therefore bad expectations. And so you can see how all of these behaviors start to become like, you never do this, never PvP, never do that, you know, never split the party, never do whatever, you know, players, you always have to bite the hook, you know, yeah. you know, always, you know, accept what the DM offers, and that's not fun yeah. either. You know, that's not no. why we play either.
No, not at all. And I'm sorry, I'm going to say it right now, always split the party. That's
always.
Where fun
yeah.
happens.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
where the narrative, like, watch every movie.
Sure,
they
yeah.
always split up and then crazy shit happens. Crazy.
Sort of a thorny, messy, just kind of gray area because I don't think these are qualities or traits of particular gamers. I don't think particular games, you know, breed these kind of traits in people. Mm-hmm. It's just like mismatched play styles. We don't necessarily know what we want out of the game, or I'm having a bad day and yeah. I'm just not with it. That's another reason why I feel like ascribing these things to problem players is just a you know, not particularly helpful, because what if it is like a bad day? What if you've got a player who's just, they've had a terrible week, they're not feeling it, they're, you know, they're not being as sensitive to how their actions impact others or whatever, they're not their usual self. And you wouldn't want to have like a framework in place for addressing that that casts them as, you know, who they are as the issue. It's more just like, hey, are you doing all right? Like, do you need to take this week off? Or, mm-hmm. or like, do we just need to like forget about the game and like throw some orcs on the table and have a big battle?
Yeah.
Like there's that was your kind of thing for years. It was clear mm-hmm. on the weeks we didn't have big fights that there was something you were not getting out of the game. You could tolerate that for a little bit.
Yeah,
but no, you know, that was my impression at least. And
No, it totally was. Like in the beginning, like I, you know, like some people, I used D&D as an escape or as a catharsis.
Yeah,
right. It was just I had a shitty week at work, but mm-hmm. this weekend all those problems are getting splattered on orc faces, and then it's followed by my sword.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know, I don't really do that as much anymore,
right.
just because I really like story. I'm running a game now where there's. No, there's not really that much combat at all. It's
Certainly.
More just intrigue and talking people down. And
yeah.
that's fun because it's still conflict.
Right, right.
There's still the chance of violence.
Yeah.
But being able to walk it back from that precipice is I think, is more interesting.
Certainly,
than
yeah.
just kick down the door and start slashing shit. I was that player for the longest time, and I seemed disinterested in some role-playing aspects where I'm just like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah,
But, you know, I don't know. I tried not to make it everyone else's problem.
Certainly. And I'd say from a DM perspective, I don't think it was noticeable from other players, but never like a problem. And from my point of view, it was one of those things where it was a helpful checklist. And I would know, like, is Pruitt seeming to check out? Or does Pruitt seem impatient?
Mm-hmm.
Well, when was the last time we threw down?
Yeah.
You know, when was, and not just like a little, you know, worth nothing, inconsequential.
Yeah, you don't
sort
even
of,
put minis on the table.
We don't even put minis on the table. I'm talking like we have a setup, we got the tiles out,
yeah, yeah.
you know, the markers, the whole shebang. And that helped me pace the game.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've said in our DM styles episode, like, you don't have to have everybody on the same page playstyle wise. You can have power gamers, min-maxers, role players, whatever terminology you want to use, all playing together, and the DM can kind of like orchestrate that. And for me, I just had a 3-session check-in. Every 3 sessions, what have I covered? What's happened in the last 3 sessions? Have we had some RP? Have we added new information to the game? And has there been action? And mm-hmm. I know for myself, if every 3 sessions we're not hitting those 3 things, then I am not going to be create a game that's as engaging to my players as mm-hmm. I could. And it helped me create a natural rhythm for the game, avoid problem situations, and, you know, the like. And I think for a lot of these problems that we'll get into in just a minute, where we'll list off some specific examples, if you're able to empathize with the person who is being disruptive, if you're able to see, like, what is it they want out of this experience of play, and maybe why they're acting the way they are, has a reason, has a logic behind it, has a purpose, and it's not just they're a jerk, they're an asshole, they don't know how to play well with others,
mm-hmm.
they might just want different things out of the game.
You know, my cat Monk isn't generally an asshole, but if I don't pet him enough, he starts knocking stuff off. Like, and
sure.
it's the thing, it's just, like, it is a way of kind of getting attention.
It is. That is another
right?
thing, is a way of getting attention, yeah. And it's sort of like a negative way of getting attention. You don't want to encourage it.
Right.
Which is why
negative things are more quickly acted upon
sure.
and more strongly acted upon, therefore
yeah.
any attention.
And, you know, you can see that play out in, you know, if you have players who are not, say, invested in a hook
yeah.
and they want to do other things, then they might start doing things to disrupt the hook that you've provided them. And they might start, this is where they start, you know, you start hearing DMs say, oh, they're derailing. They're not following the story. They're not doing this. And my answer to that is like, well, they're trying to tell you what they want to do. Why are you resisting it?
Yeah.
You know, they're trying to let you know, like, they might not be articulate about it. They could better ways they could do it, but
yeah.
That's the communication. That's the attempt.
An example of that, which I'm gonna wrangle in our producer Travis.
Yeah.
And he loves to play thieves.
Yes.
And just go steal shit.
Yeah. The solo's right? thief run.
The
yeah.
solo's thief run, but just like stealing stuff.
Yeah.
And early on, I wish we were more mature about it. Well, he never really disrupted the game.
Mm-mm,
but he was usually just kind of checked out.
And there were some players who really were upset by it.
They were upset because they thought that he, like, you don't give a shit about this game. And he's like,
yeah.
what? I'm here. I'm paying attention. Are we fighting? Do I
yeah.
need to steal something? Because
yes.
he's the thief.
Yeah.
You know? And I wish that we'd been a little bit more mature about it. Because
yeah.
I gave him shit sometimes. I admit.
Sure.
I'll
yeah.
own up to that. Sorry, Trav.
Cool, buddy.
And so
I never cared.
Yeah, you didn't care. You got to play more because you do solos all the time, and then his character would show up decked out
in magic items.
I don't know.
You make the goddess of love fall in love with you? No.
But it's one of those things where a player had a particular interest in the game, a different way of looking at it.
Yeah.
They were still there during the game.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And different levels of engagement by players. That's another one we see a lot of from both DMs and other players, is how other people are engaging with the game seems to really get under people's skin. Mm-hmm. And the only advice I have for that, how I solved that for myself when it was a problem for me, was to stop caring and just trust that this experience of play, that the magic that happens when you get together and a game just starts working, will draw people in. And if it's not, then it's time in between games to sit with that player, and it could just be that they don't care, that they're perfectly fine to just show up and hang out with their friends and roll some dice and twiddle on their phone, and maybe you just stick them at the other end of the table where they don't bother anybody.
Yeah.
You know, or you give them permission to come and go as they please. That's the biggest one for me. A lot of these behaviors can be alleviated if you give the table permission, the players permission, to come and go from the table as they please.
Yeah.
Can I get up whenever I want? As an ADD haver, you've got to let me stand up and walk around.
Yeah.
It will start being a problem. I'll start stacking dice. I'll start bouncing my legs so hard the entire table will shake.
Yeah.
You know, like,
which knocks over the other ADD person's dice, and then they start PvPing, and it's all just a shit show. Yeah.
So let's go through some, like, specific examples here and just kind of talk through what the behavior is and everything else.
Yeah, so I think we should start with the generally labeled types that are sometimes seen as problems.
And what are the
and we kind of went through these in the DM episode, but like the big ones, like the power gamer, the min-maxer, the rules lawyer.
Sure, yeah.
You know, like, those are sometimes seen as problems, which
yes.
I don't like. I'm sorry, like, if, you know, if somebody really likes to be good at their character, to be good at something, that why is that? I thought, you know, craftsmanship was a good thing.
The divide and sort of split between I am a role player and therefore a superior gamer to the power gamer is sort of like, no. First off, they're not opposites. They can be complementary, they can be exclusionary, but they're not like...
They are not in opposition.
Right. No, it's not zero sum, you know.
I'm with you.
And the other thing of it is one of the very things, a lot of the, you know, complaints that you'll see about these sort of play styles, it's sort of like, well, yeah, but in the complaining and in the sort of grousing about the play style, it's not like, oh, you're doing the same thing they're doing and kind of like you don't have to listen to them, but it is kind of like you're doing the same thing they're doing, so why should I listen? Like, is there not a different way to approach this issue other than these people suck and they should stop? Mm-hmm.
My only problem with that is when you're that player who is maybe shepherding a newer player or someone else, and you look at their sheet and you're like, why didn't you X?
Yeah.
Why didn't you put that in that? And it's like, you know that the main stat for a druid is wisdom.
Right.
You know, things like that.
Yeah.
Like, that's when it becomes a problem. When you start forcing your style on someone else, that's when the DM should just step in. You know?
Sure, yeah. That's number one, right? Like, unasked for advice, unsolicited advice is just, I don't know, in my experience, it seems to just kind of rub people the wrong way. And while they might not say anything at the moment, and they might not ever say anything, it can contribute to sort of a feeling of, well, I don't know, I can't do this, I'm always going to need help, and then you're 2 years down the road, you're still looking up stuff for them. I've certainly played with people like that, where it seems like they're never really able to grasp the basics of the game, and then at the same time, every time they play, because the other players who have gotten it are very impatient, they never have a chance to learn. They never have a chance to go like, okay, what page is it on again? How do I look it up? Maybe next time I could look it up before I want to do it. They are able to kind of check out, and then when it comes to their turn, someone will give it the book. And that's a very specific example, but in a lot of these cases, what I find is that there's someone else at the table who's, if it's long-term, and it goes on for a long time, there's someone else at the table who's facilitating or betting, could be the DM, could be other players, maybe somebody's not speaking up, but communication is where it starts.
What about the absentee player?
The absentee player
they're there 1 week and gone the next. Every other week, though.
It's tough. Do you have a lot of these players? Then you need to run a game that accounts for it. You know, like, that's just the hard truth of it. Maybe the same group of people every week, or the same group of, you know, party every week is just not going to cut it, and you need to run, like, a troop style where characters come and go, and you have episodic adventures You know, mega dungeons are great for this. Hex crawls are great for this. Any content where there's like, or any kind of game where there's a default play mode, we don't know what we're going to do. That means we go to the dungeon.
Right.
You know, here's where we left off last time. We cleared this room, We think there's treasure here, or whatever. Or, you know, we're mapping up the river, but we could always go up the coast and mm-hmm. try that. Or you could use, like, online adventure generators that'll sort of create scenarios for you to kind of tease out and add details for. That can work really well for faction-based play in a city, something like that. So, yeah, you can deal with them in that way. If you've talked to them and it's a matter of, like, their work or family... Yeah, you know,
life happens.
Life happens, and how many people like have jobs where they don't know what their schedule is week to week? It changes constantly, and they don't get notice for it until the last minute. It really seems, it really feels unfair to like punish those players for things that are beyond their control. Now, all that said, I don't think you should punish them, but the question of whether or not they get XP is something to talk about, because mm-hmm. there are some players who are going to feel like, listen, I would be here if I could. I want to be here. I don't want to be working or doing whatever, mm-hmm. And they feel sort of a that double whammy of you didn't get to play and you're going to fall behind.
Yeah,
is too much in a game like 5th edition. I'm just going to have them keep pace. It's been 5 weeks since you played. Well, guess what? You leveled up twice since then. Are you going to
Hey, you're off doing other stuff.
You're off doing other stuff. Let's talk about it. You know, do you need a minute to familiarize yourself with the character now? You know, I'd probably recommend that player play a very simple character that can be picked up and put down without a lot of worry, probably not a spellcaster.
Yeah, they hop two levels because they've been gone a month, and now they have to pick 10 spells.
So. Yeah, it's the same with, like, the people who are on their cell phones, but they're on their cell phones with their families. You know, they're on their cell phones with people who they need to be on their cell phones with. You know, the person online or wherever is saying, you know, I hate cell phones at the table. They've drawn this line in the sand and can't say, well, except for this person who needs to be able to get in touch with so-and-so. And
yeah, what if they're on call for their job?
Or they're on call for their job. I mean, this is,
No, I think cell phone use is one of those things where it's just like, I mean, if they're just phone under the edge of the table texting with the button clicks on silent, like whatever.
Yeah.
But, I mean, yeah, if they pull their phone up and start having a conversation in the middle of D&D, that's where it becomes a problem.
Sure, yeah, definitely. And this is, like, a lot of these are, you can cover in Session Zero. You can talk about them in Session Zero. If you didn't have a Session Zero where you talked about it, then, like, take some time outside of the game to just sort mm-hmm. of chat. For some of those, behaviors, especially like the ones we were talking about a minute ago, rules lawyering, metagaming, power gaming, the ones that have a really bad rap, and that players may not want to be accused of, like, just email the DM if you notice it. We had that one thing where we got disadvantage on everything, but I just kind of noticed that they weren't doing that. Maybe they did, maybe they didn't. As a dungeon master, you can say, thanks for the heads up. I'll just do a character audit of everybody's character sheets next time. As mm-hmm. a dungeon master, that's probably something you should be doing at the beginning of every session anyway, just to for yourself to refamiliarize what the players can do or what the characters can do. Mm-hmm. It's also a good way of just kind of checking up. Are you doing everything? Is everything on the up and up?
Yeah,
and to loop it back around to absentee players, it helps because, hey, you haven't been here in a while. Let's make sure your character's mm-hmm. up to speed and the like. So,
yeah. Oh, no, definitely. And thank you for giving me a segue into the next one, which is the add-on player. You get to the situation, it's like, do y'all have a grappling hook and rope? Yes.
Yeah, yeah, of course they do. They always, they've got the right spell, they've got the right thing.
Uh-huh.
I understand where they're coming from. I have engaged in the behavior myself, especially early on when you're preparing spells and you don't want to waste a slot. And you're like, yep, I sure do have that second sleep spell.
Yep, I took Detect Magic because I didn't want to cast it as a ritual.
But also, a lot of times for me when that happens is that the Dungeon Master doesn't check in to make sure that I'm ready to play, mm-hmm. that I've selected my spells, that I'm good to go, and it's, you know, I haven't picked my spells yet. Do I have a spell that fits for this situation? Well, I could. I have access to it. Would I have prepared it today? I don't know, but it certainly seems like it'd be handy now. Mm-hmm. And so, like, those are situations where, like, personally, I don't care. Especially if it comes for things that, like, your character's competency would have included. Like, yeah, you might have forgotten for the rope, but, would your character have forgotten the rope? Kind of thing. If it really bothers you, then, like, limit it somehow. Every player can do that 3 times. a level or whatever, you know, or
can burn an inspiration.
Can burn an inspiration to have that. Yeah. So yeah, or you can do it if you're like lose something else out of your backpack. You know, just like give them a trade off. You know.
No, I pretty much when it comes to equipment, I really agree. Unless it's like in a very expensive item, like you're trying to look at something in the distance. Oh, I have a spyglass.
Yeah, yeah. Expensive spell component.
I'm going to need a gold, please.
Yeah. Pretty much anything above 10 gold, I probably will not.
Yeah.
Just you know, but if it's ammunition, we assume you stock up. Unless the game is about counting every bit of weight and every bit of coin, you know, unless
hard
it's that kind of
survival
game.
Mode, mm-hmm.
then I will. So the add one more. I have the always has the right tool for the job, but then at the same time, I've played with players who are just good at selecting spells and being prepared, and you're just kind of like, seriously, you had that spell prepared? You're like, yep, it's right out here on my sheet. I gave you that sheet at the beginning of the session to tell you what spells I had.
Yeah, well, for me, it's equipment. You've seen my equipment list for my rogues.
Yes, I have.
What about when one player steps on another player's goals? Let's say, Jim, for instance, you're going into, say, a fight, maybe against a big bad.
Okay,
and one of the PCs is like, hey, this is my former boy.
Sure,
I think I can save him. We just need to subdue him so I can maybe, like, save him.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And then you're fighting, and you're winning the battle, and you subdue the guy, and then a player just comes along and kills him.
Yeah, yeah. That's,
now, I mean, this is just a random example that I pulled up. Not really, it's meant to be the same as anything that's actually happened.
Didn't hit close to home.
Yeah.
Yes.
Still not holding a grudge about that or anything.
No, no.
I've seen it happen multiple times over the years.
Yeah, and it has.
Most of the time it's accidental.
As you alluded to, this is a real.
I don't know.
There have been several times in my role-playing sort of like days where something has happened when a player's done it, and I've been so like,
what?
Really? Like, seriously? That I didn't do what I think I would have done, which is say, like, no, you don't. Like, you know, so you guys see
you
him moving.
Him,
you know,
straight up.
I would just straight up. I mean, if it's the climax of a thing, like in this case, we're talking about the end of a 10-level, adventure. We're getting ready to decide whether we want to continue the campaign or end it here. This is a possible, you know, closure for the thing. And then to have this sort of happen in a non-combat situation, right? Like, this is not combat. That you have this character at your mercy.
Yeah.
I think what I would retcon is you move to strike. You move to bring this enemy down and kill them, but so-and-so stops you. Let everybody else know, you guys see this character doing this. What do y'all do? Mm-hmm. If we need to, we'll roll initiative. I think I would have handled it that way because as it stood, it's just like, wow, okay, I guess that happens. See y'all next week. You know, it just was this weird kind of like, bleh. And we mentioned it on the DM, Problem DM episodes, is like a lot of this advice comes from specifically my own botching and mishandling of a lot of these situations where I've been, man, this player over here is really making some of my other players creeped out. What should I do?
Yeah.
You know, or like, that was a weird moment in the game. That felt like a violation of something. Like, that seemed like it was a real thing. You know, I remember like calling you back in the house and being like, what the hell? Like, you know, I mean, like, you know, just to talk through it, and you seem pretty hot.
So I was pretty much screaming.
These situations sneak up on you. Mm-hmm. And there's some of them, like this particular player that did that, I had talked to this player multiple times. And in one-on-one, the player was, oh yeah, man, I'm really sorry about that. Yeah, I don't want anybody else at the table to feel like I'm ruining their fun or something. You know, like, oh man, you know, you're the way you use this spell coupled with this class ability, like, I just don't think these two things were meant to go together, as often happened in 3.5. You know, so like, let's find a way to address this, because like, you're doing a lot of damage as a Duskblade, and like, some of the other characters are, you know, they feel outshined, and oh, I don't want that at all. Like, I, you know, I want to be a good team player in this. And like, for me, after the third time, it should have been like, hey man, this doesn't seem like it's working out, and he's not showing up every time. Then those are warning signs, and those are warning signs that in my own sort of, you know, as the DM, I'd either look at and go, they're not that big a deal, or you know, or we'll just deal with it when it happens. You want to avoid conflict or something. Then you have something like this where we're at the end of a campaign. And it's a moment where you can have a satisfying closure for your character. It could be a very satisfying arc. It worked out kind of great. Just everything fell into place. Mm-hmm. And then at the last minute, for it to be kind of pulled out from underneath was very frustrating. And it was the precipitating event where I was like, you can't come back, man. Like, sorry. I just, no more. And that's one of two people, one of three people that I've had to personally tell, you can't come back. It's hard.
Yeah.
And it is tough. If resolving these kinds of issues were easy, there wouldn't be this, yeah. right? We wouldn't answer y'all's questions. There wouldn't be, you know, all kinds of guidebooks and everything about how to deal with these things. It's easy to diagnose a problem play style or mm-hmm. disruptive player. It's much harder to address it. You know, yeah. it's much harder to address.
Kind of taking a step back from like the grievous way of discounting plans, but the Leroy Jenkins.
Yes.
The party's sitting around. Yeah, they're making their plan. They're right outside the cave, and they're like, all right, there's two guards. All right, you're going to go over here, whatever here. And then Leroy Jenkins just busts right through.
Yeah. The barbarian, the impatient barbarian, the...
In all honesty, I've been this person.
Why not? Yeah, so have I. Or the opposite of it. You know, the person who's just like, they want to take their time with one thing, and they're the only one that sort of wants to do it. Either way, it's a player who is elevating their personal engagement with the game over everyone else's. And while there needs to be a balance, there needs to be a sense mm-hmm. of fairness to who gets to act and whose decisions and sort of choices affect the course of the game. And ideally, it is a collaborative effort amongst everybody. But there are some times where it's not, and someone will either not speak up or will sort of... you know, they're not treating it that seriously, and so they're just like, screw it, we're tired of doing this thing, we're going to go in here and attack these people, or I'm just going to keep shopping or talking to these NPCs or whatever. A large part of dealing with that is on the game master, because you can say like, hey, just a minute, like, we're still planning, are you sure you want to go run in there? Okay, you guys see that your friend's about to bolt, is there something you would like to do? And in those situations, I will let players know, like, hey, if it comes to it and we've got to like roll against each other, is that, you know, how you want to play this out? Some groups, they're fine with it. Some groups, they don't want to. And most of the time, it's probably a player thing. A player's bored. A player isn't engaged. They want to do something else. Mm-hmm. And they just can't sit still long enough.
It's a version of another, the next one I was going to make, which is the spotlight call. Person who needs to be in everything.
Yes.
Every conflict, every social encounter. You're talking to the guards, you're talking to this, and they're always the one to step forward.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, a party can have a leader.
Yes. Yeah, a party can have a leader.
A good leader knows who's good at what.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, and delegates. And
like, not just leads by leading.
Yeah.
You know, I'm the leader, so I'm going to talk to the guard.
Yeah, I'll do it
Your
all.
Charisma's 8.
Yeah. Whether or not I would consider myself a spotlight hog or just a spotlight lover.
I just love a spotlight like, dalliance.
Yeah, just like, what I realized I liked to do with this, and I, for a long time I did worry, like, am I a spotlight hog? Is this what I'm doing? I like having a lot of skills. I like having the option to participate in all pillars of play, if we're thinking about Dungeons & Dragons.
Right.
And what I kind of realized is that I want to be able to contribute to a scene and help facilitate someone else's scene. I don't need to be the spotlight in those moments, but I want to contribute.
Yeah,
that I want to have a hand. I want to be able to have a voice. Not, it doesn't need to be the dominant one or even agreed with.
Yeah.
You know, the player is free to say no thanks or don't need you.
Yeah.
And I try to extend that to others as well. If I've got something that's going on that I think is more focused on me, and there's some characters in the party that I think, like, oh, that might be an interesting in. You know, example is I'm playing a Trollkin Ranger who's in Midgard setting, and they're dark, fey kind of character. Gloomstalker is what I'm going for because I think it's nice and creepy. Like Baba Yaga is the, kind of pseudo-patron. And there's someone in the party, a Shadow Fae. Apart from just sort of the relationship with that player and the course of the game, I can see my character wanting to know more about them because of their shared ancestry of somewhere along the line, my Trollkin had someone, a Shadow Fae, that lived elsewhere and came to this world, and now there he is.
Right, right.
And so, like, it's a way of, like, finding something in another player's... character that they've made, their play style, something that you enjoy, and engaging with it and boosting it, and that's largely where I came to with it. It was like,
Well, let me tell you, not to derail into sports ball,
yeah.
But John Stockton is in the Hall of Fame mostly for assists.
Sure, you know,
he's the assist leader of all time. So that ain't a bad thing.
No.
You know, Carl Malone's there too.
Sure.
But you got to pass him the ball sometimes. look it up, kids.
Yeah, and anyway. So if you've got, it's not as though that everyone needs to play that way.
Right.
But if you've got a few people playing that way, one or two can make a world of difference. They can draw in players who are not as engaged. They're another set of eyes, another observer, along with the DMs. They're like, oh, you know, I bet that player might appreciate it if we did this.
Good cop, bad cop.
They're affirming the other player's fiction. They're building up the bonds of the group and mm-hmm. elevating the group. If we're kind of talking about, you know, problem play styles, problem behaviors, then we're really talking around what makes a good player. What are good behaviors
yeah.
to have? And, I, you know, rules mastery is great. You know, having a great imagination and sharing it is great. But to me, like, boosting other players
yep.
is the number one, like, what I want out of a player at the table.
Empathy, sympathy, engagement.
Yeah.
Like those three qualities, I think, if you can have those and then just know some of the rules, everybody's going to have a great time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I think this kind of leads also to this next point,
yeah.
which is one of the most talked about, I think. The, but my character would or wouldn't,
yeah.
dot, dot, dot.
Right. But my character wouldn't run around with these people they just met and go on dangerous missions.
But my character would stab that person.
Would stab them in the back. They would steal from the snake. So my character would I find it a seductive phrase.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, my character would. There's been plenty of times when I have done things in the game that mean I'm going to enjoy the game less, but I have more satisfaction out of playing to my character's alignment. And when I don't, or alignment in the sense of who their personality is. And
not just your any.
Right. The deck of many things in your first Spelljammer game.
Yeah.
Whereas Jim, the dungeon master, like, deck of many things, like, this is great, you know, the shenanigans. But my character would have been like, no.
The fact that you drew any card,
yeah, it's just like very uncharacteristic. Mm-hmm. And one of those things where, you know, the motivations of the player and the character, you know, start to diverge, and what fiction are we, you know, being true to? And there's a lot of high-minded concepts you can think of. But at the end of the day, I felt like I had betrayed my character, that I had gotten caught up in the moment. Deck many things. Awesome. And it had forgotten that I was trying to portray a hyper-paranoid, kind of spy.
Oh, yeah. No, he had a rigid view of the world.
Very rigid view of the world,
what made you alive, what kept you alive, and what would get you dead.
Yeah, yeah.
And only the known quantities.
Yeah.
I just chalked it up to the fact that everyone else was so excited, and Zila,
sure, yeah.
you always tried to play Zila where he was trying to see, like, other people's perspective.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Maybe it was just for his own, like, personal reinforcement of, like, okay, I can trust them, I think. You know, whatever. Yeah. But you just kind of got caught up in that, and it was fine. I mean, where you counterbalanced that was y'all's insane signing over of the ships and everything to another party.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So that y'all researched the deck of many things and had heard. And I was like, all right. And I basically just rolled some tales, some rumors. Like, you had heard that one person drew a card and lost everything. Like,
yeah, so
their house disappeared.
We signed the ownership of the ships over to one of the
crew
or something else.
And, like, drop us off on an asteroid, and you left all your good gear and bequeathed it to someone else. And just, like, I was like, all right, that's crazy.
Yeah, yeah. But, so it's like, yeah, all of us on an asteroid in the middle of nowhere with an air pocket, like, drawing from a deck.
Come back in 2 days and see if we're still here.
Something will happen where you're, you know, there's a mismatch or whatever, and you get over it. Play through it.
So next, Jim, I have a I have a collection here.
Yeah. Okay.
Of rolling behaviors.
Oh yeah.
I've engaged in some of these dice shenanigans.
Dice shenanigans.
So we're gonna rapid fire these, mostly because I'm very proud of the names that I came up with. But the first one is the rolling off book.
Ah.
Like, when you have that player who literally says, who always takes their die and they roll it on their notes or their book, and anytime it rolls off, and they'll pick it up, oh, rolled off.
Rolled off, yeah.
And then they roll again, and then a couple times later, they'll roll and it hits a 20.
Uh-huh.
And they're like, oh, natural 20. And yet everybody else is like,
wait a minute.
3 rolls ago, it rolled off in a 3, and you picked it up and said, oh, off book. Like, that's a double standard, right?
Sure.
So the next one, of course, is the Schrodinger's book crack. It's just kind of the same thing. It's where you roll into the crack of a book, and, like, depending on how the die's cocked, if a 20 or a 19 is up, they'll take it. But if it's a 5, no. Right?
No.
And so there's that one. And then there's the quicker picker-uppers, which is they roll and, oh, that was a 20. You know, or, oh, that was a 19.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, and then, of course, the last one is the mother nudger.
Mother
which
nudgers.
Is they roll and just get in there really quick, and you just, they tip that 5 over to a 13.
Tip it over.
Right?
Pick it up real quick.
Yeah. And so, I don't know, I thought of those and had a good laugh.
That's good. Yeah, the dice shenanigans are like, there are times when they want to have a dramatic moment and the dice fail them.
Mm-hmm.
And what they're, you know, in their eyes, like, the dice fail them. They deliver a non-desirable result. Now, I like those outcomes. I experience the same sort of like, I should have won that thing. I mm-hmm. should have survived that mm-hmm. or nailed that save. If that's like an overwhelming impulse at your table, it's like a lot of players are feeling it, then there's ways to handle it. That's where allowing a certain number of rerolls for whatever come in. Mm-hmm. They can take the lucky feat, you know, if they're doing something like that. Or you can give, you know, use like hero points or action points or something to sort of simulate that. Because a D20 produces flat curve, right? 5% for each interval. And it can sometimes lead to weird results. And it's the whole reason why other games use different dice systems and different dice, just gimmicks and things. And but if you're rolling, you're rolling to see what happens. You're willing to accept the result. It's like, just dice fudging is like, there's another way. Talk about it. What's going on? Why are they doing this?
Right.
You know?
Well, my thing is, if you're just relying wholly on fate, then you're going to get what you're going to get.
Yeah.
Right? But the game does have mechanics, it has options, it has spells, it has everything to try to get you in a better place. Why aren't you trying to role play better so that maybe the DM gives you inspiration?
Sure.
Now you can roll with advantage when that big moment happens.
There's a lot of things.
Right?
Yeah.
Or encouraging more synergy with everyone, so it's like, oh well, hey cleric, you got a bless? You know, like we're about to go into a combat. You got to are we setting everybody up? Is this person doing fairy fire? Because we got a lot of got 12 combatants over there, and they're all bundled up. Get advantage on all of it. You know, I mean, like there are options.
There are options
in the game, and to me, like when you have one of those big moments, it's a teaching moment. Like, how can I better prepare myself so I'm not just at the whim of fate?
You're saying, like, you're going to use your abilities in a very sort of, like, cooperative manner and make sure everybody's got something that supports the other. You can even sort of, like, approach the situation from a perspective of, can I, as a player, manipulate things so that I don't even have to roll? Right? Like, can I arrange things in the game so that someone else takes care of this problem for me? Can I arrange things in the game so that it's not a problem at all? It takes care of itself. Mm-hmm. Like, especially when you, like, move beyond the, like, combat as the central focus of a game like D&D or traditional fantasy role-playing, and you move it more towards, we're just going to explore this imaginary place. There'll be action, there'll be combat, there'll be other stuff, but we're here to just sort of, like, get into trouble and have an adventure. And, like, then you get into all kinds of fun things about how to bypass challenges and get through obstacles and overcome foes. And it varies things up, and you have more sort of, like, interesting and engaging play.
So I only have a couple more on my list.
Sure.
One of them is the peekaboo. You have that person that sits at the edge of the table right next to the DM screen, and they're always, like, stretching, like,
oh, what's back here?
What's going on here? Like, we need to go to the right.
If you've got someone peeking at your notes, like...
That's just like cheating on a test. I mean, like, that's just...
They've either misunderstood what the point of this whole thing is, or something. I don't know. Talk to them if you catch them. Also, if you're really worried about it and they just can't seem to help themselves, then, you know, that's what ciphers and drawing in code and, you know, like creating a flowchart dungeon or just writing in utter gibberish. Mm-hmm. You know, writing like Charlie from Always Sunny. Just like pictograms and hieroglyphs for your... DM notes.
I'm going to start doing
it. Yeah, the peaker, they're just hurting themselves. And you know what? If you suspect they're doing it and you talk to them and they don't stop or whatever, and you know, you don't think it's... Some of these things are not worth, like, kicking someone out over.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there's some things that you just like, I wish you would stop that. I, you know...
It's, yeah, that, to me, that's mostly just a, dude!
Right. This is also where I sometimes look back and I go, yeah, at one point it would have been acceptable to, like, have a trap go off, have a wandering monster come by. And, like, maybe there are situations where if there's an in-game consequence for them, that might be enough for that player. And I think that, like, these are, like, issues about between playstyles and DM and player, all that stuff. It's so complex that to just be like, no, never do X or always do Y just seems weird other than always talk. you know, and always treat each other with respect. Like, that seems like pretty good absolutes to follow.
The maximum web DM, which is don't be a dick. No, last one I have here, everybody's got pet peeves, but what about the players that have pet peeves?
If you're one of those players that has a familiar, lots of pets, you like to conjure animals, that can be, those are some, like, procedural things. Like, I kind of am a fan of, if you've got more than one pet, spread the love. Like, you know, let someone else control it in combat. Use average damage. Use, to-hit calculator that's not just rolling dice. Mm-hmm. I don't know, pre-roll 80 rolls of dice and just hand them to the DM. I feel like these are my animal's rolls for the campaign. You know?
Like, that is an... Because I have done that before, Jim. It's an amazing thing to do. If you have an animal that... when they attack, they roll a D6, whatever,
yeah.
roll a D20 and a D6, D20, D6, and just give that list.
Yep.
Here's the attack, here's the damage.
Yep.
If it hits, it does that. If not, oh well, scratch it off, go to the next one.
Yep.
And that way the DM can just narrate, well, your wolf runs in and takes a good bite out of them.
This is one of those things where players worrying about what other players are doing when the other player is just playing the game.
Mm-hmm.
They're not doing anything wrong. They're just engaging with the game in their own way. I'm always surprised, in all the years I've done this, I'm always surprised when I meet a player who's just like livid about something another player's doing and it has no impact on the game. Again, I mean, it does on their experience of it, so I guess in that sense it has an impact, but it's not like, oh, they're taking forever to resolve their turn, or they are attacking NPCs that we're trying to ally with them. It's just like, no, they played a character I don't like. It feels like one of those immature reactions to something you don't like. Grow up.
You can have a preference, but that's for you.
Yeah.
Like, that's how you play the game.
Sure, sure, sure.
So, yeah, you know, like most things, I think, it's all about just communication and, you know, just be open and honest with each other. And for the most part, it can work itself out.
It will solve a lot of problems. It will hopefully, at the very least, make the resolution of those problems less tense and fraught. But also, like, these are, most of these things have nothing to do with the game. They've got nothing to do with RPGs. Mm-hmm. They got nothing to do with what kind of game you're playing. They have everything to do with what's going on in these people's lives. You know, it's a personal thing, and these are interpersonal problems. Again, not mental health professionals, but there's only so much you can do.
Yeah.
And if it's a case of the other four of us would like to continue and have a good time, and with you in the group, we're unable to do that, you might just have to have a messy, we can't play together anymore kind of conversation, and accept that it's going to be weird and tense and not pleasant. Like, you know. Yeah.
But hopefully you can work it out.
Hopefully, gosh.
And the sun will shine tomorrow.
Yes.
If you like the video, give it a thumbs up and subscribe.
WebDM exists thanks to our Patreon patrons. The Web Demons.
If you join the Web Demons, you'll get our weekly podcast, show audio, discounts that'll save you way more than $5 a month on books and dice, and so much more. Check out our free podcast episodes right now, including our free interview with Luke Gygax about all things D&D.
If you like our advice for your games, then why don't you come check us out and watch us play?
Yeah, we've got games on Twitch every week, and they're archived on our second YouTube channel, WebDM Plays.
Thanks for watching.
So, okay, so I roll off the book.
No, you need to roll off both times.
You need to roll off both times.
Because that's the thing, is you roll off the first and like, oh, rolled off. And the second time you roll off, and it's an 18.
Oh, it's an 18, like, yeah. But, roll off and pick up.
Yeah, no. You roll off and be like, oh, see, that's an 18. And so I'm like...
Okay, yeah, okay, I get what you mean. I rolled off the book. Shouldn't roll off the book. Roll on the book. Oh, 18.
Well, no. You roll off the book again.
Okay.
Because the whole joke is, like, you sometimes pick it
up.
You pick up the die when it's a shit roll, and you leave the die when it rolls off when it's a good roll.
Okay, so, all right. I know.
Right?
I don't know.
Yeah. Fine.
Come on, DM.
Let's talk about problem players on WebDM. Yeah?
It actually rolled a nat 20.
No, it did. It took everything I had not to go, oh, shit!